accession number 17734, Reel 3.
Mr. Passmore, Reel 3.
Yes, we were allocated a bungalow between two of us. We were given a servant, who's a first grade old boy, who we had, between the two of us, we had to pay his wage. Then we were told, of course, that there was a bisti, a cleaning man, a laundry man, and so on, that we shared. Some servants you shared between two, some servants you shared between four, some servants were shared between eight. But altogether, the staff bill was fairly high. And as I say, we were on British rates of pay. The Indian rates of pay were more than double ours, which, of course, allowed them to pay for these servants. But the result of a month in India was fantastic experience, but poverty, an overdraft when we got home, whereas in France we'd been restricted in the amount we could draw so that we didn't get into debt. When I left India, I was badly in debt. Anyhow, we were then transferred from Bombay to Egypt. I joined the base pay office in Jerusalem, which dealt with the pay of locally purchased products, which varied from food to locally manufactured things for the army. Also dealt with cash payments to units and pay of individual officers. I didn't know at the time, but I had in fact been allocated to 5th Indian Division, 5th Infantry Division, who had done the invasion of Madagascar from the Free French and had then been posted to the Persian border in case the Russians broke and the Germans broke through and came down to capture the oil fields. Well, they didn't want a paymaster up there because there was already a base cash office there. When I was in Jerusalem, one of the things that I had to do, I was suddenly sent and told that I had to go to Cairo and collect all the cash that the Bank of Egypt wanted to give me and all the cash that Barclays Bank head office wanted to give me. And my guess was that they were anticipating that the Germans would break through at Alamein and invade Egypt. So I went down to Cairo with a 1,500 weight truck, a sergeant clerk, and the driver who acted as my batman. Went to the Bank of Egypt first, and they gave me a number of cases which I sealed and gave them a receipt for so many sealed boxes. Went then to Barclays, being frightened to death, of course, that somebody wouldn't realise what I was taking out of the Bank of Egypt and would have stopped, ambushed me on the way. Got to Barclays Bank, unloaded the Egyptian money and put it into Barclays safe. Well, I talked to the Barclays people. They said, oh yes, we've got a lot of English pounds we want to get rid of. We've got Palestinian pounds, all the money we don't need here, plus our reserve of Egyptian money. Will you please sign for this, which was a chit for 70 million pounds? And I said, no, I'm not signing for that. I don't know that that's what you've given me. So I then reported to the base cash office in Cairo, and they gave me about 10 staff. And we spent a few days then in the bank of in the vaults counting all this money. And I eventually gave them a receipt for it. That meant to say that my 1,500-weight truck was then loaded by the bank's porters into this 1,500-weight truck. And again, nobody provided me with a guard or anything else. I eventually got it back to... we decided that we would go by train because we got so much stuff. So I arranged for two carriages to be reserved on the train, loaded all the boxes into one carriage and put the sergeant there, my batman and myself, in the other one. Got to, I think it's Kantara where you change onto the Palestinian railway. Had to employ local porters there to transfer the stuff. So I'd got the sergeant counting the boxes out at one end, me counting them in at the other, and the driver running to and fro with the porters to make sure that nobody went off with a box. Got it all onto the Palestinian train, which then finished up in Jerusalem. It took me 48 hours altogether. Then had to organise a vehicle to bring it into Barclays, and deposited the whole lot in Barclays DCNO in Jerusalem. Nobody seemed to think it amazing that I'd brought millions and millions of pounds for a country where men were paid about threepence a day to work. As I say, I was worried to death, because I could visualise myself being cashiered if anything had gone missing. After this, another special assignment came my way. I don't know why I was always chosen for these odd things, but I was told that I had to go around the Middle East, not attracting attention, collecting £1 million in notes, which must be as small a unit as possible. Under no circumstances was the bulk to be more than the suitcase that I was given. Not told why, just told to go round, collect this, come back. So again, down to Egypt, collected all the high value notes that they had got in the meanwhile, because, you know, ships were coming in from England with troops, and they were depositing their spare bar takings and things like that in Barclays Bank in Suez, which went up to Cairo. Ships were coming over from India with Indian notes. Obviously, I was only after the high value notes. From Cairo, came up to Tel Aviv, then to Haifa, then to Beirut, then to Damascus, and back to Jerusalem. Between the lot, for instance, in Syria, I collected Syrian bank notes, which were face value approximately £1,000 sterling each, one of which was signed by two or three people in ink. The same with Lebanese money. In Cairo and Jerusalem, there were British bank notes, the white notes for £100, Anyhow, I got my £1 million altogether, but I was told to do this without raising any suspicion. Right, there was I giving out cheques signed by me, drawn on Barclays Bank, Jerusalem, for these monies. When I got to Jerusalem, I was told to go to a small Arab town and report to the manager of the Ottoman Bank and hand over the cash to the gentleman who was with him. So I turn up at the Ottoman Bank again with my 1,500 weight truck, myself, and pay corps sergeant. I mean, all we had in armament was the sergeant got a rifle, the driver got a rifle, and I got a revolver. And saw the manager, told to come back after hours, which I did, reported to his flat because he lived above the bank, and he said, "Have you got what I've been told you're carrying?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Right, give me the suitcase." I said, "I want a receipt." "Who are you giving it to?" I said, "I've got the gentleman in the next room. I'm not allowed to tell you any more." Oh, crumbs. You know. And after a period, he came back and said, "The gentleman concerned is satisfied, and you are to send a signal to the War Office in London, reference so-and-so, saying, my client is satisfied, and that's all." Which I did. Never heard any more about it. The only thing I can say is that 5 Division was in Persia. We were in control of the railways in that area. We were in control of the railways in Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, Palestine. But there was a link between Iraq, and Syria that went over Turkey. Only a few miles, I think about 10 miles. I might be wrong about that because I don't really know now. And that 5 Division and some tanks put all their heavy vehicles, all their Wren carriers and heavy stuff onto flat trucks, which went all the way. Because if they had gone by road, that tremendous distance, the tanks would have, I mean, tanks only go about 15 miles without throwing a track. The repair problem would have been immense. And they all arrived in Egypt on that route. And my guess is that this was a bribe to officials in Turkey, who in turn, they must have bribed all the staff on the railways. But out of £1 million, they kept an awful lot for themselves. Presumably that went to politicians. But that's only guess. I've never seen any reference to that in the newspaper, nor have I seen any reference to the fact that we removed money from Cairo. We always said that we were quite sure that Egypt would never fall to Rommel, but I think they must have been making preparations to withdraw everything from Egypt into Palestine, at least.
What year was this?
42. Mid-42. Mid-42, the removal of the money. I'm just trying to... When we were on our way back to Alamein...
It'd be about June 1942, probably.
As I say, my guess was mid-42. I was going to put it a bit later than that. And the bribery and corruption was late 42. So after that, I was posted to Suez, where we were beginning to land troops for the advance after Alamein. That was December 1942. And there was a team of us that went out and met all the troop ships coming in. And one man said, right, your equipment is coming on such and such a ship, which arrives, all being well, on such and such a day, and you will pick it up. In the meanwhile, you will go to such and such a transit camp. There were other officers dealing with other problems. Mine was to turn around. Again, I was given instructions to where these men were going. And therefore, I was sort of saying, right, all your English money is useless. You're not allowed to use it in the Middle East. I will change your money for Egyptian money if you're going into an Egyptian transit camp. If you're going straight through to Palestine, for instance, then I'll give you Palestinian pounds. most of them, obviously, were going into transit camps in Egypt and going up into the desert. That could be quite exciting because the arrangement was that we went down on a motorboat with an Egyptian engineer, and we went down about 25 miles down in the early hours of the, during the night. We got on to a yacht that was permanently moored there, and you'd get probably three ships coming in at one time, six ships another time. So you joined the ship you'd been allocated to, and you had to, in my case, I had to have the money changed by the time they were ready to disembark in Port Tewfik. Then you came back and put the money in the office safe. So you were up at 3 o'clock in the morning. If you're doing something like the Queen Mary, you finished at 8 o'clock at night, perhaps. Did that for a time. Then I was posted to 5 Div who were outside of Damascus. They'd been pulled back from Persia, and they had one brigade along the cedars of Lebanon learning to ski, learning to evacuate casualties on jeeps from the mountainsides, and generally learning how to live in the snow. One brigade was down near Aqaba, where they were learning how to waterproof vehicles for a beach landing and practicing coming in off landing craft and that sort of thing. And one brigade was up in the desert. And these were alternating. So the people in the desert went to the Gulf of Aqaba, the people in the Gulf of Aqaba went up on the snows and so on. But the divisional headquarters was in a French army barracks outside of Damascus. We were brought down from there about the beginning of May 1943. to the Gulf of Aqaba, where it was quite obvious then that we were going to invade somewhere in the south of Europe. Eventually, we were put on board troop ships at Port Tewfik. Daft that may seem, because I was a chartered accountant there, I was told that everybody had to leave all their mess funds behind in Barclays Bank in Egypt, and I was to audit all the mess funds. So people were coming not just from 5 Div, but from all sorts. There were about a dozen troop ships there. All sorts of people were coming in and sort of saying, please audit this. Well, some people's idea of what you can audit and what you need to audit, I mean, they couldn't care less. Sergeant's mess, probably in fairly good order. Officer's mess, not in such good order. Did the best I could, kept me busy until we set sail. We sailed through the Suez Canal, out into the ocean, far as I was concerned, not being at all sure where we were going. I was in a ship that contained most of one of the brigades. 5 Division had about 60% Scottish units. We had 2nd Enniskillen Fusiliers, who were Irish, but again, kilted Irish with Irish bagpipes. We had several Scottish Highland Division infantry battalions. We had the 2nd RSFs, who were in Trews, of course. And they were brigaded up always with one battalion of English troops, and usually the answer was that the Highlanders or the Irish went first in to an attack. A 2nd Lowland Scottish battalion would be put in to follow up, and the English battalions were always there to take the counter-attack that invariably came. That was the theory of the thing. Anyway, the result of this was that we had formal mess dinners on this ship with the pipes playing round it in the evening, with the pipe major at the end of the meal being offered a tumbler of whiskey by CO and marching out. The usual toast to the king. And therefore that was a bit of a shock when one day you had your mess dinner and at 5 o'clock the following morning you were going down scrambling nets into a landing craft on your way to the beaches in Sicily. I landed on D-Day plus 3, and there were still parachutes floating in the water from the parachutist who'd been dropped there, and you will have heard about that from other people. Landed, went into a slit trench until eventually I was told that my vehicle had landed with my money. and proceeded then to find divisional headquarters, where I was told that obviously I wasn't needed. Before we had landed, we had been told that the expectation was that we would lose a third of the division in the first 3 days. And that's why we were given an extra brigade to make up. fact, the casualties weren't as bad as that, but they were quite bad. There were four liaison officers in division. Several of these had been killed. The next thing I did was, would you mind acting as liaison officer to 13th Brigade, which was commanded by Brigadier Campbell, who won a VC at Marathon and had been sent to 5 Div after that. So I was running messages to him, keeping in touch with the situation reports as they came in. By that time, of course, we all had wirelesses. The GOP staff were marking up maps, of course, all the time, being sent out to find out where people were when the wireless didn't work properly. On one occasion, was sent with a message to Campbell, got to his brigade headquarters. They said, oh, you know the brigadier, he's always well forward, there's an attack going on at so-and-so, and it looks as if it's got bogged down. I said, well, that's why I'm here, to find out exactly what the position is. They said, well, sort of follow that track, go down there, you'll find such and such an infantry battalion there. So off I go, pass by a regiment of 25 pounders. And come out of a fairly open area into an area in Sicily where there were sort of a lane with stone walls on each side, rather like you find on Dartmoor. And going along here, and suddenly there's a jeep reversing rapidly down there, and Campbell standing up waving madly. So we backed up until there was a gap in the wall, and Campbell went in down behind the wall. I followed, and there was my first sight of one of the Tiger tanks with its huge, great 88mm gun. That was the first. It was in the early days when they were only just starting to put 88mm guns into German panzers. And we sat there until the tank turned up, obviously found the artillery battery. And they just had time to open up on it, and when we heard the tank brew up, we were able to come back. Campbell had obviously gone a bit too far ahead. On another occasion, I was sent to find out why a battalion had been held up. Went down a lane to a river, which we were told was about, I think, 5 foot deep.